to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Barai. There are 14 days. Can't believe it. 14 days until the midterm elections. And we are doing our best to get candidates and down ballot candidates down on the show so you can get to know them before election day. And today is kind of different because I'm not actually sure if this race is considered down ballot or not because it is a statewide race. So this person, no matter where you live in the state of Wisconsin, will be on your ballot. And we are joined for the next half hour by Attorney General Josh Call, who is running for re-election. Welcome to the show, Attorney General Call.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Yeah, so it's so fun because we got to finally meet in person when you were on Earl Ingram's show a couple weeks back. And we said, how do we get you on the show? And here you are with 2 weeks left in the election. How are you feeling?
You know, I feel really good. People are enthusiastic around the state to get out and vote. It's going to be really close in every statewide race. And certainly we expect ours to be close. But I'm also very confident. We've got a great record to talk about. There are very clear differences. And ultimately, I think that as long as folks across the state get out to vote, we're going to have really positive results for the state on Election Day.
That's great. So because we have a mixed, I mean, people listen to the show who are not necessarily super political because we cover a variety of topics. And I was out yesterday and I had someone ask, who are you having on your show this week? And I said, Attorney General Josh Call is on tomorrow. And I got a blank stare back. So for people who don't know, one, what the Attorney General does, and two, who you are, who are you?
Yeah, well, it's a great question. I like to say, you know, we all took in elementary school that I think it's third or fourth grade where you get the basic overview of what state government is like. And I don't think there's a day where they spend explaining the authority and responsibilities of the Attorney General. And in fact, it varies from state to state. Different states have different authority in the AG's office. So in Wisconsin, our AG oversees the Wisconsin Department of Justice, which has over 700 employees who work on all sorts of issues related to public safety and the justice system. We have lawyers who prosecute cases, who handle criminal appeals, who litigate constitutional challenges and enforce environmental and consumer protection laws. We have investigators who investigate crimes of statewide importance. We have people who work on law enforcement services involving things like grants or data collection or other law enforcement related issues. We oversee the state crime labs. We also have an Office of School Safety that works to keep our schools safe, an Office of Crime Victim Services that works with victims of crime, and an Office of Open Government that works on open government issues. And so we work on a huge range of issues that impact Wisconsinites. In terms of me, I grew up in Oshkosh and Fond du Lac. My mom was a prosecutor and elected official for a lot of her career. My stepdad was a police officer in Neenah. And I've had the privilege of spending a lot of my career in public service. I was a federal prosecutor in Baltimore, one of the most dangerous cities in the country. I prosecuted murderers, gang members, and drug traffickers. I also spent part of my career doing voting rights litigation, challenging laws that restrict access to the polls and fighting to expand access for people so it would be easier to vote. And then for the last 4 years, I've had the privilege of serving as Attorney General.
So just to pick up on that Baltimore sentiment, how real or not real is The Wire?
You know, the Wire, so first I have to say, I was convinced that I got the job because during the interview process, I didn't mention The Wire, even though I'd seen it all. But it turns out that everybody in the office was interested in it after I started. But what I think The Wire does a really good job of capturing is sort of not the whole city of Baltimore, but sort of what a neighborhood in Baltimore is like. And I'm sure you remember there were the sort of two rival groups, the East Side and the West Side folks. Well, in Baltimore, in my experience, that was more like a neighborhood. And one of the cases I worked on actually involved two rival gangs where in 2011, there were five back and forth murders between those gangs. Right. And we worked extensively to investigate what was behind that, who was responsible for that violence. I worked really closely with a detective who was working as a task force officer to get a bunch of information. And ultimately, we charged a number of people who were members of those two gangs with a number of offenses, including with some of those homicides where we were able to identify the people responsible. And what we saw in that neighborhood after that was a big drop in violence after those charges were brought. And it's a good example of how effective long-term intensive investigations into networks of people committing crimes can really make a difference and make communities safer.
That was a much more serious answer than I was expecting. That I was picked up on the wire. But our guest this half hour is Attorney General Josh Call. And so while I was going to ask this later, but since we're talking about crime, that is a major issue for a lot of people. I live in Milwaukee, and, you know, whether it's just because of the ads, but every poll that comes out, people are worried about crime. And one of the things, because I've never worked in the criminal justice system, I feel like there is a lot of misunderstanding, myths, assumptions on what is in the purview of any given office to affect crime. And so there are issues at the local level, there's issues at the state level, the U.S. Senator, everyone's running on crime. But as far as for your position, what is in the roles and responsibilities of the Attorney General? Because it feels like you're closest, this would be the role that's actually closest to it, as far as budgeting, priorities, and other things that you could do in this position to curb the rise in crime that we're seeing.
Yeah, you know, there are a lot of different positions that impact public safety, and the Attorney General is absolutely one of them. And that has been my top priority throughout my time as AG. It will continue to be my top priority as long as I'm AG. First, the level of violence that we have seen in not only Milwaukee, but in cities around the country in the wake of the pandemic is unacceptable. We need to change the trajectory on this. And there are a lot of things we need to be doing. First, what got us here is a few things. One is that we have seen just this spike in all sorts of antisocial behavior following the start of the pandemic. People have been isolated from others. That has led to increased substance use disorder, increased mental health issues, more social isolation. And we see not only shootings up, but reckless driving,
domestic violence,
all sorts of other. That's right. And you know, air rage incidents are up. I mean, that's there are just lots of types of behavior that's harmful to people that we've seen spike. That's been especially harmful in communities that were already strained in terms of the resources they had, the lack of connection between people, the lack of access to services. And in Wisconsin, there's no better example of that than how the legislature has refused to provide adequate funding to the city of Milwaukee for decades. We've also had a criminal justice system that's been underfunded for decades in Wisconsin. And so the day that I was inaugurated before the pandemic, I called for the legislature to finally address the underfunding of our criminal justice system. We really need to get resources to local law enforcement to invest in the important work that they do to prevent crimes, to solve crimes, to engage with members of the community. We also need to make sure we've got resources for our courts and our prosecutors and our defense lawyers so that the court system works efficiently. And then we've got to invest in the critical services that can prevent crime from happening, like drug treatment programs, mental health programs, crisis response. So back in November of last year, almost a year ago now, I put out a comprehensive public safety plan that we called the Safer Wisconsin Plan that proposes to invest $115 million in public safety. It also proposes some common sense gun safety measures like universal background checks, extreme risk protection orders, and also increased felony classifications, so tougher potential penalties for repeat felon in possession and straw purchasing laws. Unfortunately, our legislature has not only blocked it, they haven't held even a hearing on that legislation. In my crime fighting budget for next year, we also proposed significant investments in public safety. We need to continue to have an AG who's got the experience and the track record, keeping people safe and holding violent offenders accountable. That's what I've got. And we need to invest in our communities and pass common sense gun safety legislation. And so I'm going to continue fighting to get that passed.
Attorney General Call, can you clarify for me? There are claims that these red flag laws include no due process. So my ex, Luann, says I threatened her with a gun. And so someone just comes to my house and takes all my guns.
Yeah, that's totally false. So first, there are a number of states that have these laws in place right now, and they have consistently been upheld in the courts. Wisconsin does have a process called under Chapter 51 of the state statutes for what's known as emergency detention, where if somebody is a danger to themselves or others for certain reasons, they can actually be brought into custody. What we're talking about with the red flag law is something far more narrow. We're not talking about taking people into custody. We're talking about preventing people from having access to firearms for a limited period of time. The reason that it's important to have this in addition to emergency detention is that it's a lot more likely that a court is going to say, okay, we got to keep you safe from firearms rather than actually taking somebody into custody. It's also much less intrusive intervention for law enforcement to be making. But we know in a lot of cases where people have committed mass shootings, there were clear signs beforehand that they were a danger. Now, the process that we've proposed with this law would set up a hearing in front of a judge. A judge would need to issue an order before this order would come down. So the idea that there's no due process is just incorrect. I know it's a talking point that Republicans have used, but this is a step that would allow a family member or a law enforcement officer who sees that somebody is a danger to themselves or others to take action to intervene. And if you make a false report under the law that we've proposed, you could be charged criminally for that.
Which that, I think, is an important distinction, because in the same way, if you accuse someone of other, let's say, sexual assault in that, and like there is ramifications for that as well, right? Like you can't just go around and claim things that didn't happen, correct?
That's right. There are potential penalties. And you know, the way I view these gun safety measures is pretty simple, which is there are people who we know are dangerous, present a danger to others, and making sure that they don't have access to firearms when they might act on that is going to keep our community safer. So take universal background checks, for example. Right now, we conduct background checks on the vast majority of firearm sales in Wisconsin. Our office conducts many of them. We do a good job. It's efficient. And if somebody is a convicted felon, then they're not allowed to have a firearm and the background check doesn't clear. But there's a loophole in the system that allows you, if you make a private sale, to not go through the background check. So you can literally sell guns out of the trunk of your car to people, not conduct a background check. And unless you know that they're prohibited from having a gun, law enforcement can't do anything to intervene. To me, having some common sense measures that prevent people we know to be dangerous from getting guns is one of the steps we need to take. Another example is people convicted of certain domestic abuse felonies, which are classified as disorderly conduct under state law. Right now, under a recent Supreme Court decision, they're allowed to obtain firearms. And there were a number of domestic violence-related homicides in Wisconsin just last year, and about two-thirds of those involved a firearm. Having these kinds of common sense measures will keep our community safer and reduce crime.
And keep women safe.
That's right.
Without going on a tangent, because we're interviewing you. You know, one of the things when we're on the subject of mistruths and lies, you recently asked 5 Milwaukee area television stations to not run your opponent's attack ad because multiple assertions in that were not true. I didn't realize that candidates could just ask for like lying ads not to run. What was the reaction when you asked them to not air that?
Well, they were following up with the people running that ad. There's an outside special interest group known as the Republican AGs Association that is supporting my opponent's campaign. They, by the way, one of their arms was encouraging people to go to near the Capitol on January 6th. This is the type of organization that we're talking about. And their ad, which is attacking me, is just consistently false. It makes some basic claims. For example, it attacks us on funding for the state crime lab, saying we've cut funding. Well, the truth of the matter is funding has been increased, and we've actually called for even more of an increase than the legislature has approved throughout my time in office. So it's one thing to run misleading ads. It's one thing to attack people, but it's a different thing to be actually just outright false. And so we have made that point to the stations, and we'll see how they respond. But the truth of the matter is that, you know, what is in there is just not true.
Well, and since you are a lawyer, we were asking this at the top of the show. Is there any laws against campaigns running just outright lies in their ads, or is it really just a free for all?
Yeah, by and large, it's a free for all. That being said, you know, there are certain laws in place, like defamation, where if you meet a certain legal standard and you've shown that laws would fail under that standard, then TV stations will often say, okay, we're going to make a change here because we think that this is actually crossing the line. The standard is even higher in cases of public officials. So it's a very high bar we have to meet. We have to show that they knew that what they were doing was false.
Yeah.
In addition to being false.
All right. We got to go to a break really quickly, but Attorney General Josh Call will still be here when we get back. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Know you, getting to know all about you. Getting to like you, getting to hope you.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Our guest this half hour is Attorney General Josh Call, who is running for re-election. And one of the stances that I know Jane and I appreciate is, I think it's safe to say that you are against the current abortion ban that is what we reverted to after the Dobbs case came out this summer. And I know that you and Governor Tony Evers had filed a lawsuit because on the grounds that law, old, I'm going to say it, old ass law, can't be, it's outdated. And so are like, you're the lawyer, you can explain it, but where are we on that lawsuit?
Yeah. So, first, just before we get into the details of the lawsuit, I got to tell you, I've heard from people since this decision came down about the impacts that the change in Wisconsin law is having on people. And as your listeners probably know, the three Planned Parenthoods in Wisconsin shut down. There's nobody who's providing access to safe and legal abortion right now. But, you know, in this case in Ohio, a 10-year-old rape victim had to travel to Indiana to get the health care that she needed. In Wisconsin, there was a case involving a woman who had a partial miscarriage and was left to bleed for 10 days before a doctor believed they could intervene and provide the medical care that was needed. And, you know, I heard from an OBGYN who told me that right now with planned pregnancies, which she said used to be the most joyous appointments I would have. And I remember those appointments with my kids. You know, there's a 20-week ultrasound when you count their fingers and their toes. She said now some people come in and they're terrified about what's going to happen if there's a complication with the pregnancy. And if you think about parents who have a couple kids at home worrying that getting pregnant again could potentially leave their kids without a parent, it's terrifying and it's wrong. And we are doing everything we can to fight this draconian 19th century ban. So 4 days after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, we filed a lawsuit that is seeking to block enforcement of the 19th century ban. And we have argued a couple things. Our main argument is that there were laws passed after Roe v. Wade was decided that regulate legal abortion and that they are fundamentally inconsistent with that old law and that you can't have laws that simultaneously make certain abortions legal and illegal. So because of that, we've argued the old statute doesn't apply. We've also argued that the old law has gone into disuse, which is a legal concept known as desuetude. Because even before Roe v. Wade, abortion bans were very rarely enforced. And so we've also argued that it would be unfair to now enforce that law under that principle. This case has been filed. The legislature, which has wanted to be involved in all sorts of cases we've litigated since I've been AG, this time all of a sudden doesn't want to be involved. And so we changed the defendants and so added some DAs as defendants. They have a response due next month. Once they respond, I expect that we'll see briefing on the merits of this case, and then it'll likely get appealed eventually. So it's going to be a matter of months at least before we get resolution. In the meantime, the legislature can address this problem any day. All they need to do is come back into session and repeal the 19th century ban. And, you know, the governor has given them opportunities to do that. They've just refused to do it. And so, you know, while they can claim that they don't support this ban, the reality is that they are keeping in place a 19th century law passed decades before women won the right to vote, before the Civil War, that has no exceptions for rape or incest or even to protect the health of the mother unless it's necessary to save her life.
Attorney General, that's one of the things that I think I find the most infuriating. Supporters of complete bans knew that there were so many things that had not been codified yet about how close to death does the mother have to be before we can allow this procedure. They could have done something about this and had these protections in place before this decision came down, and they chose not to.
That's exactly right. You know, in almost a year ago now, we held a press conference at the Capitol calling for them to repeal this ban because we saw the writing on the wall with the Dobbs decision. Then the governor called a special session and they wouldn't come into session. And so they are leaving these horrific consequences for women in Wisconsin in place. And even putting aside the core issue, you know, if we had any statutes regulating healthcare that were passed 170 years ago, applying that kind of framework to modern medicine would make no sense. And yet that's what we are left with here in the abortion context. It's wrong and we're going to keep fighting it.
And just if you and or Governor Evers are not reelected, what happens to that lawsuit? Does it just die on the vine or does it have standing regardless of the outcome of the election?
My opponent has been very clear that he would withdraw from that lawsuit on his first day in office. So he would end the lawsuit, helping to keep the ban in place. But he's actually gone even further and said he wants to empower DAs to prosecute abortions in neighboring counties. So roving abortion ban enforcers. There's no other type of case that he has suggested this for. It's just for abortions. And where it's really scary is doctors right now have to make really tough choices. The statute says when it's necessary to save the life of the mother. Well, doctors don't get a report that says now is the time when it's necessary. But what they're dealing with is here's a percentage of this thing happening, here's a percentage of a different outcome. They've got to make really tough decisions under threat of criminal prosecution to protect women's health. Having an AG who's saying, I'm not going to enforce this outdated ban, sends a very different message, and a message I think we need to send to doctors, than having an AG who not only wants to enforce it, but wants to empower these roving abortion ban enforcers. It would put the safety of women in Wisconsin at even further risk than the current law does.
Well, on that very upsetting note, let's do our speed round. And with all the candidates who come on, we do a quick speed round just to get to know you a little bit better. So in the 2 minutes we have left, first job.
I worked at a golf course in Fond du Lac in the summer. I drove the golf cart around and people aimed at me in the driving range.
Favorite stay-at-home pandemic activity?
Any board games with my kids. I spent a lot of time getting to hang out with my kids. They're 8 and 5 now, and they've gotten very into a bunch of different games. So it's been a lot of fun.
Person you would most like to meet, dead or alive?
Probably Abraham Lincoln. He's my hero in American history and politics, so it'd be pretty cool to me.
Something about you that would surprise people?
Let's see here. I'm a pretty boring guy. I've got to think of something surprising here. I was the fullback on the Fondy Cardinals football team, and I scored one touchdown. It was a 1 yard run, but it counts as a touchdown all the same.
The most recent movie or TV show you'd recommend?
I've been watching the new Game of Thrones season. It's not as good as the prior season. It didn't end the way I was hoping it would, but I've still been enjoying it.
What's your walk-up song?
I've struggled to find a good one, but I like Bruce Springsteen, The Rising.
And finally, what's still on your Wisconsin bucket list?
Let's see. I thought you were going to ask what should be on anybody's, which is going to Devil's Lake was high on my list. Let's see. I have not been to the Lion and Kugel's Brewery, but I would like to go there.
I highly recommend that. I did that 2 summers ago and it was great. All right. Attorney General Josh Call, thank you so much for spending time with us today. Where can people find more information about your campaign and get to know you better?
They can go to our website. It's at joshcall.org, or they can find us on Twitter at joshcallwi.
All right. Thank you so much for your time today and good luck with the rest of the campaign. All right. Well, that will take us to the break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about solar. Stick with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Beautiful and new things.